Welcome back to the Wheelchair Roundtable, where experience meets real talk and every story adds power to the movement. I'm your host, Rico, ATP. Joining me is my brother in wheels, Mr. Roland Reyes. And get this, we have a new member to the team. Mr. Danny Flores is joining us also. Today, we're sitting down with Mario, a C5, C6, incomplete spinal cord injury survivor, whose story is one of strength, determination, and pure heart. After his injury, Mario faced some tough challenges that would have broken most, but he kept pushing forward. He went back to school to pursue a master's degree in civil engineering and found purpose through perseverance. Mario is just not a survivor. He's a builder, a thinker, a fighter. His story reminds us that no matter the injury, no matter the odds, there's always a next chapter to write. So pull up to the round table. Let us dive into this story of courage, commitment, and when it really matters to rise.
I'm very excited about this episode, Rico.
Yeah,
Danny. Our pre-show prep last night call with Mario was amazing. But before we get to that, how was your weekend, Rico, Danny?
Dude, my weekend was amazing. I was up in Houston at NRG Center for the Abilities Expo, and I was very impressed with the turnout. So since the past couple of years, it's kind of dwindled down a little bit, the attendance.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Key Mobility is no longer attending the Abilities Expo, but you had your heavy hitters, like our friends at Quantum, Permobil, Invacare. You know, they were all there and they were all very kind. And they know we're on the radio or on the podcast. So cutting the corners, like, hey, Mr. Podcast. And like, oh, I heard your podcast. I was like, oh, okay. You know, but that's all they say. They don't say, hey, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's like, I heard your podcast, and they walk off.
What's up with that?
Give me some feedback. Am I doing something right? But I have been getting some good feedback. So that was the Abilities Expo. I did shoot some video. Quantum's got this new Edge 4. So I hopped on the Edge 4 and I just drove around the expo shooting some video. So that's on our Instagram page. And it's also on our Facebook page.
I saw that. I saw the videos from the Abilities Expo and I'd never seen that before. I'd never seen like so many wheelchair users in the room.
It's amazing.
I'd never seen that before. And I've been to the 11 symposiums. I've been to lots of the med trade. I'd never seen that. I've never seen it so patient or customer or client centric. Centered around that. I've never seen that before. And so sorry to cancel you last moment but I'll be there next year for sure.
Yeah, we were sitting like a basketball team, dude. We're sitting on the bench and you're up, right on order. You're up. You're up. I'm serious.
So that took me by surprise that you were actually getting business while you were there. Dude.
Well, we were the only one.
Oh, you were the only
All the manufacturers were walking people over to the booth and we were just writing up orders.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was really, really good. Came back yesterday. Pretty much didn't do anything. Just caught up and just rested. Can't find anything good to watch on Netflix or binge on.
Dexter.
I don't really like Dexter.
It's great.
Do you?
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, that was my weekend. Danny, how about yours?
I rested up, psyched myself out because today was my first day back at work.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just, we call them enrichment camp. So it's kind of like kids that are coming in. Maybe some freshmen or sophomore that haven't taken like college classes or different things going on at school, and just to kind of get them in there for half a day, get them used to, maybe they're new students, they haven't been around there, our campus or whatever, and just show them around, get them used to the place, show them around, introduce ourselves to other teachers, get them ready for the school year, which starts in, I think, the 26th for us.
So, what
campus are you at, Danny?
I'm at PSJ North High School.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. I've been there many times. I've worked on lots of students' wheelchairs there, for sure.
How long have you been at that school district?
It will be 10, well, maybe 10 years. I started in 2016. So it'll be in February, it'll be 10 years.
Congratulations.
I laid around in bed all weekend, dude. Rested. And yeah, I was a little beat up, but I'm good. I'm really energetic today. Really, really energetic. Yeah, I got a lot of sleep during the weekend.
Good.
It's usually my sleep time, and had a great, great weekend.
There's nothing like getting the room like to 72 degrees and getting under the blankets and see you later. All right, so guess what? I got numbers. So check this out. So these are downloads, the cities that we've gotten, but they're all in Texas. All right. So Sugar Land, Uvalde, Midland, McAllen, San Antonio, Austin, Mission, Edinburgh, Farr, Houston, Weslaco, Dallas, Alamo, League City, McKinney, El Paso, Brownsville, Conroe, Cypress, Pflugerville, Raymondville, and Round Rock.
Wow.
Appleton, Wisconsin, Tucker, Georgia, Warren, Michigan, Miami, Florida, Santa Rosa, California, Lawrence, Kansas, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Horn Lake, Mississippi, Ashburn, Georgia, Chicago, Illinois, Brookings, South Carolina, Santa Rosa, California, and Portland, Oregon, and Warsaw, Poland.
Wow.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
We've gone international.
Power of the internet.
Yep. So we want to thank you all for listening. We actually got our merchandise in, so we got some shirts. So I will watch out for a post later on Instagram, maybe. Maybe we're going to give out some shirts. We'll ship them to you. But that's it, man. That's the report. What you got as far as Mr. Mario?
So without further ado, I want to introduce my good buddy, my good friend, Mario Gonzalez. Just a brief history. I mean, Mario, I met Mario maybe, man, I can't remember exactly how long ago it was, but I've done a couple of power chairs for him, including about 6 or 7 years ago, I did his permobile.
Really?
And so we're doing a new permobile now at the moment. Yeah. Without further ado, my good friend, Mario. Mario, how are you today?
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Yes, I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. Right. I'm here. To tell the story, right?
Sounds good.
I'm glad to be invited. I mean, I know you're rolling, like you mentioned, right? I think it's what, maybe like 7 years, seven, eight, more or less.
Oh, that was the last time we worked together before I went to San Antonio.
It's probably more, right? A little bit more than that.
Yeah. I think I was at Marshall Mobility when I finally first met.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was at least 15 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, it's been more. Yeah, sorry. I was a little short on that. Yes, Rico, pues, I just met you there at the practices with the RGB Vipers. I mean, nice. Dan was my teammate right there.
Sir.
We've got a really good team. We want to start off by saying thank you for coming on the show. And, you know, we did have a pre-call yesterday for the show, and it was very, very good. We should have recorded that one. So we want you to share your story, you know. People are going to be listening that need to hear this story, this story of how you overcame the odds and you went back to school. You know, we need to hear that positivity. So if you want to go ahead and get us started, introduce yourself, let us give us some background about you, and we're listening.
Yes. Yes. My name is Mario Gonzalez. I was born in Far Texas and grew up here in the Valley all my life, also in Reynosa, right across the border. I graduated from high school back in 1999, right there at Valley View High School. I did all my junior and middle school and high school. My friends there, was great time back then. They nominated me as class president on my senior year. Nice. It was great doing fundraisers. Right? I wasn't expected for that. I mean, yeah, I was maybe on the top 25% of the class or something like that. We were a small class. We were like 90 back then. So that's where I started part of my life. Moving a little bit, I graduated on 99, started at UTPA on the civil engineering program. I stopped, right? I believe I only went like one semester and dropped the second one. I didn't even drop because I didn't know that you had to drop back then, right? I started working and thought that I was earning good money back then, but it wasn't enough right now, right? But when you're single, pues, you think that's a lot. So I quit school right back then. I started working. I met my wife. Also, I believe it was on 2021. We were together maybe for a month. She moved into my house, right? And that's how we started. But when I met my wife, right, I mean, I was coming from Florida. Right? At that time, I was probably looking into universities with family members over there, right? But I came back and went to visit my parents in Mexico, and that's where I saw my wife through the window, right, of the room. And, you know, I was like shy asking her out. And I asked my mom if she could ask her if she wants to go to the movies with me. And when she told her, she's like, tell him to ask me, right? And I asked her, she accepted it, right? But I mean, I just didn't want to be rejected, right?
I hear you.
So she accepted it. And she was scared, right? Because she would tell her cousin, hey, I mean, is it okay for me to go with him? And yeah, I know him since they were little. So we went to the movies, you know, regular stuff, like everything. So we had our first child over here in McAllen, right? Then our second child, Ruby, right, came along. And moving a little bit forward to my accident now, right from there, I'm going to jump a little forward because I want to come back to that part, right? Sure. Towards the end of our my story, right? So moving forward to 2005, right, in October 22nd of 2005, around 6-7 in the afternoon, that's when my accident happened. After dropping out from the university, right, and working at, I did some work at Converges in FAR, telemarketing for DirecTV. It was great, good customer service. That's where we were rated. There, I mean, sometimes clients, because of my accent, were like, "Send, can you change me to somebody that speaks English and this and that," and trying to make me feel bad, right? I still didn't get mad with them and transfer them with a very courteous way to somebody else and earn my 100 points for my customer service there. So I did that. Then I also did, before that, I was at a place called Supreme Plastic. I was doing quality control because the engineers there knew that I was doing engineering. So they wanted to work helping me start to learn right the ways of engineering. But that besides, I dropped school. So I changed to another job and because I think the company closed. So I did several jobs before doing roofing. That's where when I had my accident. So after doing several jobs, ended up doing roofing. We were in Mission working at this home, right, doing a roof repair, I believe. And the neighbor next to that house asked if we could take a look at his roof. So we came back a bit the next day, check it out, and he gave us the work, right? So I came back another day to start. We didn't started the work. We didn't finish. So we go back and I call him the next day and he was busy and it took me like 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a month to go back because he wasn't answering. And my wife's like, "Well, I mean, you shouldn't go, just leave it alone." But I insisted, right? And nowadays she's like, "I told you not to go at that time and you insisted it." So that's on our conversations, right? Who would have known? Maybe something else would have happened, right? It's just destiny. Like they say, sometimes even though you try, I mean, it's not going to happen. And when you don't try, it happens. So it's different in Spanish, but that's kind of the translation in English. So I went, right? And when I got there, the lady, the wife of the owner, right? She asked us if we could clean the windows. It was me, and I took somebody else, right, to help me with a ladder because we needed to get on the roof, right? It was a two-story home. So she's like, can you help clean the windows? And I said, yes. So we started cleaning windows. I was going up and down on that ladder like nothing, right? I was real flexible. So when we were cleaning the windows, there were some bees as well, like a beehive. And she asked us if we could get rid of it. I mean, I told her, sure. So I got the fire torch and started burning them down and going on the ladder like backwards. Yeah, it wasn't safe for me to do it right too. I wasn't the safest person back then, right? Unfortunately. So, I mean, but I went back up and down on the ladder like 2 or 3 times. I remember we were doing the windows and on the way, as we were going toward the front, because that's where I fell, it was on the front of the hall. There is a window right on the front. So I believe I saw like a spot on it. I put again the ladder and go up again, you know, to that window. I remember stepping towards the window, right? I don't remember. I need to go back into that house and see if there was a balcony or get in Google because I need to correct that on it. But I know that I was trying to go to that window to clean it. And I know that one of my legs at least was towards the window, one on the ladder. So the ladder kind of moved, right? The ladder didn't fall, but I did. I landed on my upper back. Tried to support the fall with my hands. I broke my wrist. Landed like I mentioned on my upper body more, but I believe it's more on my left side because my scapula got damaged. Right. Also, it punctured one of my lungs. When I fell, I didn't lose consciousness immediately. But I noticed that I couldn't move at all. I was, I believe, facing the left side, and I just thought about my two daughters. Right. One was two. The other was. Yeah, happens every time. Yeah, I don't know why, but every time it happens, maybe one of you guys know, right?
She was one. Yeah, the one was one.
So, yeah, it was 2 and 1. And I'm like, oh, my daughters, yeah. And in Spanish, I'm like, "Yame, hola, chinga." I couldn't move, right? And I know the guy that was my friend that was with me there, he called the ambulance. And I remember the ambulance getting there. They put me into the ambulance. But I don't remember getting in, like they put me into the ambulance or just the stretcher. So I lost conscious, you know, after that, maybe within the hour or, you know, the 30 minutes, whatever it took the ambulance to get there. So they take me to the McAllen Medical Center, right? That was October 22nd of 2005. And my wife was there, a family member, she says. And the doctors, I mean, they were telling her, I mean, if he doesn't respond to medication, he's going to die. So they flew me to San Antonio that same evening, right? I'm assuming they didn't have any or that the proper care that I needed wasn't available here. So they flew me to the to Brooklyn Army Hospital. So my wife went with me over there, and she was over there with me all the time. I remember opening my eyes, right? Or at least maybe I opened them within that time, right? But sometime in the middle of December, between the 1st to the 15th, that just a random guess. I don't have the exact date. I might, if I call the hospital, maybe they'll tell me. But that's when I remember, waking up from the induced coma that I had. My wife mentions to me that they had me like in this sphere going around, right? Like, just in circles, I guess, for my pressure. And I have never asked about it. Now I'm getting more intrigued and interested on it. Just it. But so they had me there. I remember waking up having the tubes on my mouth and my nose, very uncomfortable. So I guess I go to sleep again and I wake up again and but they were gone. And then I had a G-tube and a tracheostomy as well. So I was able to breathe, but I couldn't move. I remember I couldn't move at all, right? I couldn't. The only thing that I can do or that came to my mind that I was able to do was just like throw kisses. And that's how I would call the nurses or my wife when I needed something. And that would be like ice chips, because I couldn't drink or from my mouth like I used to. And so they would give me ice chips. And I needed to, I had never liked to like swallow the thick saliva, the mucus, that kind of stuff. So they wanted me to swallow it, I guess, to start training my throat, right, to swallow. But I didn't like it. So I was just the suction machine to suction it. So every night, for those days, right, that's the most I remember because that tube is the using the suction tube. And a funny story on that is it's not funny, but back when it was happening, it wasn't there. I remember this nurse because they wanted me to swallow the saliva, and she didn't give me the suction to, right? So I had to like spit on myself, and I told her, "You're mean to me," but with my lips because I couldn't speak. And she's like, "Sorry for my language right now, but like she thought I told her you're a bitch," and I didn't say that. I was saying you're mean to me. So she removed the sucking tube. The next day in the morning, I was saliva on my chest, and my wife got there. She's like, "What happened?" And I tried to explain to her with my lips, and she ended up doing taping the suction tube to my hand, right in the position, and folding, and that way I could suction myself. Because I started to get, I remember a little movement on my head forward and my arm a little bit, but very minor, my right arm, right? But that was, when I was there on a Broken Army Hospital, right? And something else that happened to me also there that was for the pain, they were giving me morphine, right? And every 4 hours, right? And so at some point, I felt like I got addicted to the morphine where I was just waiting for those 4 hours to pass so I could ask for more. And at some point, I started like hallucinating. Like I would like turn to the window, and I saw like a helicopter arriving with a person riding a stretcher, right? And they were running him through the ladder. I was looking him through the window, but there was no window either, so everything was just like turning, and my dreams were getting wild about people getting killed, this and that, and a lot of bad stuff that was happening, I guess, on our neighborhood, right, which is across the border. And that was scary. And I got to some point where I told the doctors, I told them that I didn't want morphine anymore, and they replaced it to something else. And the feeling of wanting it more went away. And that was great, right? I don't know if you guys might have any questions at this point.
Danny and I had a conversation.
Something about
yeah, go for Danny.
I'm sorry. Oh, it just reminded me when you were talking about those things with the morphine. It does do a number. It did a number on me as well. I remember I had dreams of pheasant hunting with the Queen of England, or at one point, you all remember the old 7-Up red dot? Remember those commercials, the little red dot?
Yes.
I remember vividly a dream where it was chasing me, trying to stab me. And it was all due to that morphine. I guess it's one of those standard things that they give you when you undergo one of these types of injuries. So that reminded me of that when you were talking about that right now. It's just, yeah, weird.
You were telling us, Danny, you were telling us about that you feel pain, like with a spinal cord injury.
Yeah. So I don't, when I first got hurt, like I didn't have a lot of sensation, but there is pain. It's hard to explain what, because you think spinal cord injuries, you think, well, there's no pain, you don't have sensation, but your nerves are going through it at that point, especially initially. There's so much different stuff going on with your nerves that your body just doesn't know what's going on. And reacts differently and it can cause certain types of weird nerve pain. So it is a common thing to, you know, even though we, like Mario and I, we have very similar injuries where we got hurt way up high in our cervical spine, that we do have pain. I know initially I didn't have it. Mario, I don't know what kind of pain you had initially, but for me, as time has gone by, every day is something I live with that I've learned to deal with. And it, you know, it is present in a lot of people with spinal cord injuries.
Interesting. Mario, what did you experience pain when you first got injured?
Yeah, I at this point, I don't remember 100%, but my pain right now, it's on my upper body. So if I had that pain, it was probably my upper body and not those surgeries that they, you know, for the trach probably, right? Because they also did like a mesh of something to hold my throat somewhere there. Because I don't remember exactly what they did, but they did something there too. So I believe my pain was coming mostly from that. Because on my the rest of my body, I do have sensation. Like you can touch me, you know, with the tip of your finger or a feather, I'll feel my, if you do it like on my toes or anywhere on my body. But I don't have pain, right? I cannot regulate temperature either, like the cold and hot. If I'm outside, I mean, I'll start, like my nose starts to like swollen, I guess, and my nostrils, and I need to get ice right away. But yeah, if anything, the pain was probably mostly on my upper body and the surgeries.
I know Danny had mentioned that, what you say, you're a lizard as far as your regulation of temperature?
Yes.
Mario also goes through that.
Yeah.
What kind of challenges do you have, Mario, as far as, I know Danny was talking about his challenges, his scheduling his day based on the weather. Well, what about
you? Yes. Well, I mean, like I was mentioning yesterday on the pre-call, for me, the weather, I mean, I don't have any, like if I go, like I mentioned, let's say you invite me to your home and we're outside on the back at 3 p.m. for a party. I mean, by 4, I'm going to probably be either putting water around my neck with a little rug or ice, because I just start like, I don't, my nostrils start like clogging. We don't sweat either. So I start getting anxious, desperate. I need to do like the tilt-turn recline on my chair to start breathing. But back when I started like getting better, that we would go visit family members, we would have to stop like at Circle K to buy ice, right? Like a cup of ice, because we didn't have our vehicle didn't have AC. So those things are like, for somebody like us, I tell them, you might put me on the anthill, let's say, but what's going to kill me is the sun, not the ants, right? The heat. Yeah, so the heat. On the cold, I know we were talking about what do you prefer, like the cold or the hot? I mean, I prefer cold, right? But after being cold too much, I prefer the heat, right? But I think that'll probably be better, right? For somebody. Temperature regulation, yes.
All right, so now we're at the story where you've come out of the coma. You've been at the hospital for 3 months.
Well, yes.
When you're coming out of the coma, did you experience anything while you were asleep? Did you have any type of memories come up, or did you know what had happened? I guess what I'm trying to say is I just wanted to know where your mind was when you're coming out of this coma.
Well, honestly, I don't have any memories of it. Like when I was asleep, I do remember, you know, when I fell, what I thought right away about my kids, my wife. I go away right for those months. I wake up and I couldn't, you know, like they say, like a vegetable that could only see and hear and couldn't move. I mean, I, at that point, when I saw my wife with me next to me, right, I like with my lips and my eyes told her the worst things you can tell someone to leave you. And she didn't. She stayed there. And I guess I don't know if it was a week, because, you know, everything went so fast. It was probably a couple of days or 3 years or so that I was with that mentality, trying to push her away. But she was there with me, right? So what I did, I changed my mentality right there and then, right? I changed it, right? I mean, she's not going to go. I mean, I already tried to tell her the worst thing that I could with my eyes and lips, and she's still here. I mean, so I just changed my mentality right away, right there, and to a positive mode instead of a negative mode. So when I was pushing her away, I was just thinking, just to die. I mean, why do I want to be here, right? But she didn't. So she gave me hope. Somebody's going to care for me.
She's amazing.
And since then, right? Yeah. I mean, like everybody else, we get mad, right? Sometimes we have our down days. But Well, with me, they're not down days because of my disability, my accident. They're down days because of things in life. Maybe you got upset with your kid or with your wife or this and that, right? Something didn't go the way you planned, so you get down. Those are my downs. Not because of how I am, no. That doesn't get me down. Because I had somebody with me all this time, right? But coming down back to when I woke up, right? So my wife was there, so I changed my mentality. So then I was just doing as much as I could to help whoever was helping me get better, right? So that's what I did. I know that was the morphine thing, you know, happened. That was one of the things that I remember a lot, the hallucinations, right? That's with it. But something big that happened over there too was that I was breathing on the ventilator, right? And because of that, I could not come to the valley to my daughters that were with my brother, right? And his wife and his kids, or his kid. And they were in good hands, but they were not with me or with their mom, right? And that was, my wife would play, she would talk to them, but I couldn't talk to them, right? Because I didn't have no sound at the moment. So she would play them a recording of my voice. I guess of one time that I left to work and told them something nice, I'll be back or something like that. I don't remember at the moment, right? I will have to go back to record it. But it was something like, I'll be back, guys. Instead, don't worry. And so my wife would play it for them all the time. And but they were just, and I would hear that and I would think about them, you know, because we need to, okay, what do I have to do for my wife to go with them, right? Because you need to get better because she's not leaving you here. So that in order for me to go, I needed to breathe oxygen. So they started putting me on oxygen. The first time was probably four or five seconds and, you know, like a little fish out of the water. And like that, right, seconds by seconds until I believe I got to an hour. And then I got to the point where it was enough for me, I guess, to breathe oxygen. So at that point, I don't think it was Christmas time yet. I don't remember exactly, but I don't think it was when they flew me they drove me on an ambulance to McAllen to a nursing home. It was the rehab center where I spent there until 2006 to September, somewhere around there. Colonial Manor, they're on Hackberry. I think it doesn't exist anymore.
For our listeners that aren't familiar with our area, it's a good, 4-hour drive from San Antonio down to...
3.5.
Yes.
Yeah. 3.5, 4.
So on my way down here, on that ambulance, I was like the fish, just trying to pass that air, right? And it was tough, but I was just thinking of my kids. I mean, we're going to them, and they're going to see us, and they're going to be happy. All that matter. And I just holding it until, you know, and eventually, with time passed, I was able to breathe better, right? But that was my trip. From coming back to the valley with them, they had me on this, on that room, right, for you know, I couldn't, when I was coming back, you know, already, I started gaining some movement mostly on my right arm, right? I was already getting the suction tube back then, right? So by the time I was already, when I arrived here to the valley, I think I was already touching my mouth with my right arm.
How many days, Mario, was that post-injury? How many days from the day of the injury over to you're already home? How many days was that?
Well, I mean, October 22nd, 2005, November, December, about 2 months, maybe. Yeah, because I'm assuming I came over here on the 20s, right, as to the valley. So that's a 2-month difference. Yeah.
Wow. Did you have did they sit you up in a tilt and space, either manual power? What were at the facility you were at before you came home? Were you already sitting? And did you have any skin issues like on your bottom from like breakdown or shearing or any of those things?
No. You're saying like after I was discharged from the...
No, while you were still actively in rehab, did they put you in a chair? Were you up and about in the chair and they were pushing you or...
Okay, but you're talking about when I was in San Antonio or
right,
when I arrived?
Right, right.
No, in San Antonio, I was just on a bed. I never got sitting down and I just on a bed.
So when did that happen? When did you get make the transition into a wheelchair?
Okay, that happened on 2006. I remember on my birthday, on May 17th, they sit me down on those PVC chairs that are like tilted and with the legs elevated. So that was in May of 2006. So when I believe when I started using a manual chair, or that they had me strapped to a manual chair and I pushed it like 3 or 5 feet, was sometime maybe July, somewhere in July, August of 2006. That was when I was, and of course, within all those months, they were doing straight like therapy on my back and my arms.
Right. And you were at a skilled nursing facility, correct? You were at a nursing home?
Yes. Yes. And when I arrived there, it was, like I mentioned, I couldn't move much, barely my arms. I could already talk, right? My voice started to come, right? A little bit. So I was there at the nursing home at the beginning, but they started teaching my wife, my wife would see, right? How they would clean me, like my tracheostomy and around my G tube. And also, the catheter was, I had a Foley cat. It was there all the time. My wife and my kids were there with me at the nursing home. Sometimes, or a lot of the time, they would stay there. They weren't supposed to, but we didn't have like a close place where they could stay, right? We were living at my aunt's house, right? She already passed away. Great. I mean, like my second mom, you could say. That's where I grew up, right? And my wife, they would stay there. They were stressed because we didn't have a vehicle. We had to sell our car. We had a Grand Cherokee that she had to sell, as well as some small home that we were constructing, like a prefab home at a property that I purchased before I graduated from high school. I started purchasing a lot back then. So, I mean, at some point, we also had to get rid of that lot as well. So she was staying close by, right, to the nursing home. But,
How much time did you spend out of bed, and how were your transfers? Were you a total Hoyer transfer? Or?
Yes. Yeah. They're at the nursing home.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, I didn't get out of bed. If I was placed on that PVC on May 17, maybe like a couple of weeks before they started placing me on that PVC chair. So it
did
was
they order you a chair while you were there? Did you end up getting a custom wheelchair out of the nursing home before you left?
No.
Or during?
No, no, okay. No, no, nothing like that. Until I
got out. You hadn't really sat up. Upright or anything like that?
No, no, no. I mean, only my back.
That's interesting.
My back was only like tilt enough, right? Up.
Right.
They slowly started to like to sit me down on that PVC chair, right?
And you were getting therapy pretty regularly?
Yes, they were stretching me out, like my legs, mostly my scapula, right? My left arm. You know how I have that problem, Rico, on this arm? So, I mean, it's much better than what it was. Or what the doctor said it would be. Yes.
Okay, so now you're at the SNF. You're going to get discharged home. What's going on at that point in your life?
Okay, before I got discharged, right, we're talking sometime on September, I believe so. By then, I didn't have the tracheostomy anymore, right? I was already using a manager a little bit more, right? But I couldn't do much. At that point, I was already doing maybe like to get from my room to where it was like the cafeteria, it was a good maybe 70 feet. I would probably make like 4 stops before getting there as I was wheeling strapped to the chair, right? But I mean, when my wife decides to, well, not decides, right, but when she feels that we could move already, right, to a place. Well, a little bit about the place, right? So my wife didn't have like our place, like a place that we call our home. We were either at my brother's or during that time, she was either my brother's or my aunt's house. But just driving to the nursing, it was a long distance. You're talking over there by Las Milpas area. Not very far, right? But back then it seemed far, right? Since we were not used to driving around the valley. So I don't know how she met these persons from the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, right, that they call them. And actually I was baptized with them during my high school year, I think. I'm not active at the moment, right? But she ended up with a family that had 2 kids also, like our daughters. I believe there were 2 that she was basically working with them as a maid, right? They were to have a place to stay close to me. And they had a guest home on the back with a very small room, a small living room, a small kitchenette. And that's where she was staying with my kids. And every day they would go walking to where I was. It was probably like a mile away. She would use a wheelchair to go to HEB with them, to go where I was. She said, well, you're going to come with us. They didn't want to let me go. But I mean, she already had a place close by. So they said, well, if in order for you to go, that apartment or guest home we need to check it out. So they went, inspected it, and everything seemed to be fine. Well, now they just wanted for her to be able to transfer me, help me transfer, because I couldn't do it on my own. and still, I mean, she still helps me. And she had seen, right? Rocio is one of the names of the therapist. I couldn't remember, but Rocio was one of them. She was real nice. She's like, well, you just need to do this and this. And but she will always see them, but they would transfer me when I was being transferred, right, towards those months. So she's like, oh, that's how I have to do. She just grabbed me, you know, the way we do record, or she does it, and boom, puts me on the chair. And they're like, what?
She just grabs you and picks you up and sits you down.
It's amazing to watch.
It's like a deadlift.
It's amazing to watch.
And she's got a perfect body too.
I mean, I always say she was God sent the perfect size of woman for me.
Without a doubt. She's always been so nice.
Not only on that, right, in all aspects, right? For some reason, we're humans, right? And we're not robots, so we have our big differences sometimes. And we don't talk to each other for a week or two, but she still helps me every day.
Yeah.
And she's there. And sometimes, I mean, I don't know if it happens to you guys, but sometimes I think, well, I mean, I don't know why she's here. She doesn't like, but it's just, I guess that's the way they are. She's
definitely been there for you.
Yes, a lot. And the thing is that she thinks that I don't appreciate it, right? And here I tell you that I have always appreciated it. And you can ask anybody who I talk to, right? And yeah, I mean, the only thing is that I guess we're men, right? And we're not that. I guess I don't want to speak for all men, right? Because, I mean, maybe.
No, go ahead.
I guess we buy flowers and this and that, right? But I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're more sentimental, I guess is the correct word. They're more sentimental. And they say, right, I mean, sometimes the man goes to work and by the time he comes, the woman already fought with her like 3 or 4 times and you don't even know why. And by the time you open the door and they throw like a shoe at you, what happened? Well, I dreamed that you had another lady or something. You know,
Mario, take us to the end of your stay at the skilled nursing facility. And again, I'm going to ask when you went home or y'all, and I know you're going to tell the story about your home and all that. Tell us a little bit about what your thinking was when you were about to be discharged. Were you scared? Were you apprehensive, anxious? And also, did you have a wheelchair at that point?
Well, at that point, I had a manual chair. And probably that they gave me there at the nursing home, right? That's where my wife would like put me and move me. But I ended up getting a power chair. I mean, not too long after that, right? And that's what I used, right? The power chair, because the manager. So right now I'm getting better, but back then it was very hard.
And when you say power chair, did you have tilt, recline, all those things?
Yes. And
pressure relieving cushion?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I mean, also the standing feature, it also had the standing.
All right, Marty. So let's go ahead. So you're at home. You're moving on post-injury. You're moving on with your life. Right now you're staying with somebody, but you have an ambition. You want to do better. Comes along the idea you want to go back to get your degree.
Well, this happened when I was, when I arrived at the nursing home, I don't know if it was maybe 2 months after, maybe February, March, but I was already thinking, right? I mean, if I'm not going to be able to use my body, like to work physically, I need to use my mind, right? To support my family one day, right? Because, I mean, if I'm getting slowly better, that means that I'm going to get better in the future, right? So, and also this lady went in with her Mrs. Maria, I believe it was her name, Miss Maria. She went in with her uncle. Her uncle was in a coma, right? She had gone in there to the nursing home. With him, his story was that he was washing his car. He took everything from the car. He slipped and he hit his head on the back and he ended up in the coma. Eventually he passed away, right? But Mrs. Maria, she met me and my wife and she would go and talk to us, right? And she would take me books, right, to read. And she kind of inspired me as well, like to make my decision, to start figuring out how could I get educated, once I was out of the nursing home. I didn't know when I was going to get out, but I mean, I knew that one day I was going to be out.
I like that word you use right now, Mario, decision. It's a very strong word. So I'm thinking you were at a point where you said, you know what? Enough's enough. I need to bounce back.
Yes.
So talk about that decision, because that, I think, is the turning point in the story.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, I mean, she was there talking to me, right? I wasn't decided yet, but eventually, I mean, I'm like, if I'm getting better, like image, right? Eventually, I'm going to be able to use my brain. Maybe not my body 100%, but my brain. So, I mean, I thought on, you know, finding how that was going to happen. So I started calling, well, I called STC. I don't remember any other place calling. And I talked to Mrs. I don't know if she's still a counselor there at STC.
She's retired, Sonia.
She's retired?
She might be our next guest, by the way.
And she didn't know me, but over the phone, she gave me a lot of information about DARS and how I could go to STC, right? And how that worked. There was support, right, for people with disabilities. So I called the DARS program, which...
I mean, it was assistive and rehab services.
Yes. So, I mean, I found out about them. And by that time, when I was discharged from the nursing home, you could say everything was already set up for me to start school on the spring semester of 2007.
So you started this process while you were still in the nursing home?
Yes, yes.
Nice.
I didn't even know if I was going to get out of it.
Yeah, but you made that decision.
I already knew that there was a possibility.
There you go.
And I took the opportunity or the decision, right, of starting a process that I knew it was going to happen, but it could have gone the other way too.
All right. So now I'm sorry, Maya, but take me to your first day at school. Your very first time you're going to class. What is going on with you?
Before I tell you about the first day, I need to tell you a little, you know, how I got there.
Okay.
So what I really wanted to do was architecture, because I have a step brother that I don't know, but they used to say that he was an architect. I never met him. So that, since I was a kid, had me on my brain. So I wanted to do architecture, right? I had already dropped engineering. So I started looking for places where I could learn that. The closest one was Kingsville with architectural engineering. I mean, that was too far for me. So in STC, they offer classes for architecture drafting and design. I think right now they call it differently, but back then that's what it was called. It was a 2-year associate degree. But when I went to do a tour, right, with the DARS, they took me to go to the campus. And when I went in there, I got that sensation because of me being strapped to a chair, right? And not able to open and close my hands. I was told something that made me feel like, well, I mean, because you can't move your fingers. I mean, you need all your hands to be able to do this type of work. And I mean, I knew my limitations at the moment, right? So I knew that I might not be able to do it yet, but I knew that I was getting better. So I decided to go with a certificate as a technology support specialist. I learned Microsoft software there, as well as networking, right? And a lot of, basically that certificate helped me be at a point on technology back in 2007. Because when I stopped using a computer, I was using the floppy disk on a compact laptop.
So wow.
When I started my first day, like you mentioned, it might not be the first day, but when I started school, everything was USB drives, right? The computers were working differently. I hadn't used a computer then. So that certificate helped me get up to date with technology, you know, when it comes to computers and other stuff. So my first day was probably scary because, I mean, I was strapped to a chair, being pushed, you know, and I didn't know how I was going to do it. Well, but I had an idea because Sonia had already told me, right? She talked to me and, you know, because you already have a heads up, but that I was able to do it, I wasn't sure about it, right? But I was trying to do it. It was scary.
Mario, did you have, I know Danny talked about having some accommodations made for him when he went back to school. Did you have those similar accommodations?
Yes. That's what helped me succeed in college. If without that, I would probably not make it. But the accommodation that I received was a note taker. There's a person with you taking notes. And if for some reason they cannot make it, I mean, there's the carbon paper, like you mentioned, Danny, that they can provide it to another student. So he can help you take notes, right? Or while he's taking their notes, they just give you a carbon copy of them. But first, I mean, they want us to ask any volunteers, right, that want to volunteer before, like, getting a note taker. And on some semesters, I did have somebody from my own class, a classmate, that would help me with the notes. And on other semesters, there was someone. I remember, I believe it was Carmelita. I believe she was a very nice lady, right, that student that would help me on the classes. Also, devices, like depending what you need. It depends. Every disability is different, but in my case, like I had access to a recorder. Also, at some point in the future of my education, I was also taking pictures. But at the beginning, I mean, like I couldn't. I didn't have a phone. So yeah, but there was the recording, the carbon paper, note takers, and also extra time for exams, right? And that's very helpful, the extra time, because with our disability, when I say ours, I mean me and Danny, that we have limited mobility in upper body, especially in our hands. It's hard for us to write. I mean, I can write. I mean, but it's not the best, right? But I also erase a lot. When I was taking an exam with my stylus, there's also something when the Samsung tablets came along, I don't know if you guys remember with the stylus, I started using a tablet and I would start writing, right? Also, and I would take some notes on my own, right, as well. But that happened maybe when I was doing my associate degree,
gotcha.
Right?
I want to touch base on something real quick. So you are getting your certificate. You're going along with school. And I know you talked to us about this, and person will remain nameless, but you were pretty much told that you weren't going to be able to do this, right?
Yes.
Somebody within, exactly. Someone in the school told you, you can't do this.
Well, they didn't tell me I couldn't do it, but they said you need all your hands, like all your fingers to do it better.
Same thing.
And that's correct. I mean, they have a good point, but I'm probably faster, or I was faster than some other ones. Once I was there.
But that's what motivated you, right? That didn't discourage you. You didn't put your head down and say no. That just actually helped you push you, right? It started a fire in you.
I went doing scouting to what I wanted to do. I understood that I couldn't do it at the moment. So I decided to start something else first. But that certificate, like I mentioned, was a very good benefit for me to do good in that associate degree. So I finished my certificate degree. But before I finished it, I already felt ready to do my associate, to go into the architecture, right? But I mean, when I started school or university in 2000, I quit UTPA, right? So instead of quitting and dropping out of my certificate before finishing it, I decided to finish it and not make the same mistake as I had done before, and then move with a clean start on my associate degree. And that's something that I did, right? DARS approved it. So I started my associate degree on architecture, drafting, and design. It wasn't easy, right? Because my wife, I mean, first I was using the transportation for both the certificate and the associate transportation, right, from the insurance. But I mean, they have you driving all over the place, and by the time you get home, it's like 4 hours after you got out of class, and that's a lot of wasted time. So me and my wife, I mean, we saved, and we were able to get a van, and the insurance installed a lift for us, right? And she would drive me, right? But at the same time, she had to take her daughters to school. So, I mean, my wife was, and is, but I mean, we were flying on the expressway, 885, just to get a class, come back, right? So, I mean, it wasn't as easy as it seems, but I mean, I was there. I mean, I finished my certificate within the year, the associate within the 2 years, right? But as the classes started, the difficult part about me being able to use or be able to be more successful using all my fingers or hands, full hands, was that there's some, you got to do some sketching by hand and some lines, right? And I was able to do them when we got to that, right? But very lightly. So my wife would help me. We would stay like overnight doing maquetas, you know, like those 3D, you know, what do you call it in English? It's like a 3D model, right? With cardboard of either a home or depending on the project. Or overnight running lines. So that, like you mentioned, right? I mean, it didn't discourage me. I mean, I went, and within the first year, that person used me or to set an example to other students. I mean, because I know some students were staying behind or this and that, but they're like, if he can do it, you guys can. Right? And that felt good. Right?
Absolutely.
So
after you wrapped up your associate's degree, now you're going to the university. How long were you at the university before you wrapped up your bachelor's degree?
Okay, that my bachelor's did took a while, right? It took me about 9 to 10 years to get it, but most of it was because I was taking two classes per semester, sometimes one, because I mean, it can get pretty tough, right? And also I would get a lot of UTIs, I don't get them as much as before, but before I would finish my meds and my round of antibiotics and again and again. So that's something that even put me in the hospital sometimes. I would use a condom cat, you know, at the beginning. And that at some point, I mean, my bladder wasn't empty correctly. And after, say, I don't know if sometime after 7 years of using or something like that, I switched to disposable catheters, the In-N-Outs, right? And that was also some, they do cause infection, maybe not as much, but I mean, it still happens. But I mean, that was that right there, right? About 9 years, about 9, 10, because of that. I never gave up and went back. And if it would have been, I mean, I could have gone full time, but it's not easy. It's hard, right? Especially in our situation, right? So I would say if you feel good about taking more classes, do it. But if not, just be patient. I mean, eventually, I mean, if you don't give up, it's going to happen.
Danny, did you have any similar challenges pursuing your degree, or were you on track? Did you have any type of setbacks where you had to miss a semester or anything that came up like that?
So for me, it wasn't so many physical setbacks. It was more taking, I just took a smaller load during my semesters. I think one of the things you know, when you're in a situation that Mario and I are in is anything that we're doing, whether it's school or anything else, it's gonna take a little longer. And being able to be patient, to be able to do those things and say, you know what, I can't do it at the speed I used to, right? Like that saying, what's that quote I heard? A 10-minute mile is still a mile, right? You're still getting to the end somehow, right? You might not be the way it was before, but it's just different. And I think one of the biggest challenges, especially for anybody that wants to go back to work or school, is, you know, saying, okay, you know what? I'm not the person I was before physically, right? Mentally, we're there. We're sharp as a needle, right? But it's just saying, hey, I need to dial it back a bit. It's going to take a little longer. I want to finish this as fast as possible, and it's going to be frustrating, but you know, so long as you get there, I think that's the main thing. And Mario mentioned something about, you know, having that person that helped him initially. For anybody out there listening, people always want to help. They do. I think what scares a lot of people sometimes is they don't know how to help. And it's our job as like Mario and I, anybody that has a disability, to make people as comfortable as can be to explain to them, hey, this is all I need to do, right? I'm just trying to do this. There's no need to be scared or, you know, I'm just a guy, right? I'm just a guy. I've got a small disability, but we're just, you know, I just need you to do this thing for me. And most people are willing to help. And I think if you go out there with that mentality, you know, people are going to help you and you're going to find resources to get through these things.
Yes.
Mighty, was it difficult for you to ask for help?
Honestly, it is. And it still is. Right?
Why?
I don't like to bother others.
That's
something very strong. But if I don't have another option, I would do it. If I can open the door on my own, like those at school, or well, at school, because you have the push button, right? But sometimes I place it. I'll go, I'll grab it, I'll pull it, right? And then I'll go with my chair around, hold it with my back tires and open it, and then go in. But if there's somebody there, of course, right? I mean, I'll try to ask first, right? I'm not like that. But yeah, it will cause me what if, I don't know, there's that thing, little thing. I ask, I mean, I'm not saying that I never ask. Yes, I ask. But it does feel a little like, I don't know, not bad, I don't want to say. I don't know if you understand what I mean. That, like,
I think part of it is sometimes we feel we need to, we're afraid to ask because it's taken away from this independence that we're chasing.
Yes.
That was kind of taken away from us a bit. So asking kind of reduces that independence that we've been fighting so much to do. But again, you got to pick your battles, right? Am I going to, you know, not ask and, you know, suffer over this little thing that I'm trying to do? Or am I just going to say, hey, do you mind helping me real quick with this door? And, you know, 99% of the time, people will just do it for you and with a smile on their face and have no problem with it.
Let me ask you this, Danny and Mario. As far as the tasks you're going to pick, how much does energy conservation come into this? I know you touched on that, Danny, just how much energy you're going to spend on a transfer versus writing.
So for me, mornings, I don't spend too much energy. I've got somebody that I pay to come and help me, right? So I'm not using a lot of spending transferring or bathing myself, right? She helps me with all those things. Because I know I've got 15-hour days, sometimes 16-hour days. And I know that throughout the day, I'm going to be wheeling all over the place. I'm going to be up and down in my classroom. Kids are going to be all over the place. So I'm just, you know, back and forth. So that's where I'm focusing my energy on. If I know, you know, I'm going to have an off day or it's a weekend or something, then, you know, maybe I can, you know, do that. And then of course there's the days when we have like wheelchair practice where I'm working out, right? Am I going to have a good workout? No, but I don't, you know, I stop thinking about like the bad side of it. I just do it and get whatever I can out of it. But you do definitely have to think about what am I doing today and what do I want to, right? Where do I want to spend my energy? Because, you know, it will affect you throughout the day. If you, you know, in the morning, you just kind of do all these things and you're going to need a rest. Like you're going to need a break at some point. And, you know, that can affect where you're working or if you're going to school or whatever. So you just kind of have to kind of build yourself up eventually. Because I don't know about you, Mario, but I know initially when I was at school, I was tired, not physically, but mentally tired because it was having to do things in a way that I had never done them before. And you're thinking about, well, what's next, right? And so I was tired in the sense that, you know, my mind was tired, and you just kind of have to, again, pick your battles and you know, figure out those little wins that you can get throughout the day.
What's this question's actually for both of you guys. What's something you're both proud of that no one notices or sees or even knows about?
Good question. Cool. Mario, you first.
What am I? Can you repeat it again?
Yeah. What's something that both you guys are proud of in your journey that no one sees or notices or would even know, even your wheelchair guy?
What am I proud of that nobody knows? Well,
I guess that is a tough question. If you asked me, I'd be like, I don't know.
The motivation to succeed.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
That we have. I don't regret or I never tell God. Hey, why did this happen? No, right? This happened. It happened for a reason. In my case, I faced for a good reason. And I just have that hunger, right, of getting better now, physically better. I guess I didn't do much physical therapy during my school years because I just focused on education and at school, right, doing stuff and this and that and some freelancing stuff and this and that. But I didn't focus on getting on my physical part of it. I did some, but I didn't went through it. Now that I went back to physical therapy, now that I'm with the being part of the training of the basketball team, I mean, that has clicked like an alarm in my head where, hey, it looks like you're getting slowly better, yeah, but if you continue, you're going to get more better. So you already have the mind. You just need, I mean, the body's there, right? But hey, if I start opening my hands or I don't know, something, whatever's better than just getting better than yesterday, it's already a plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Danny? That's something probably that I have.
Something that I'm proud of myself that I don't know other people think of. I don't know if I have like a one thing. I just know that every day is like an opportunity to not only learn something, but to teach something. And if my situation, right, can help somebody else learn something, then I want to be, you know, the person that does it to say, hey, look, right, I have a lot of students and they curious and they ask questions about what happened to me and things like that. And I don't want to be the person that just, you know, is closed off and say, hey, look, that's personal. Because right. I don't want them to be those people that just stop asking those types of questions. I want them to, they're curious, right? So for me, right, it's that kind of stuff. Just get through the day, even though I had a rough night, or my spasms just suck today, right? You just kind of, okay, you know what? It's going to suck, right? And you just try to get through that. And I think that's what I try to focus on. I don't know if people know that or not, but I just try to, you know, I'm a teacher now. So I turn things into teachable moments, I guess.
Beautiful.
And, you know, go at it from that angle, I guess.
Good answer. So Mario, I'm sorry, Danny. Mario, let's take you to graduation day. You've got your college degrees. How are you feeling?
Well, it feels when you disconnect from a rhythm or that life right of school going and homeworks and turning in projects and meetings and other stuff, and you stop, it kind of feels like damn, right?
What next?
Yes, right. First of all, I'm my bachelor's degree, my certificate, associate, and my bachelor's, right? They had been, I was with the Dutch program, right, with the state. They were the ones that financed all that for me to eventually go back to work, right? And that's where I'm at right now, right? I'm struggling on that right now.
You had mentioned, Mario, and I think Danny touched on this yesterday. It's a very, I want to touch on this. You have a choice of, you know, having benefits, but when you take on a job, you lose some of those benefits. So you're at a certain point, it's like, do I want to get a job or do you, I didn't know that.
Yes, that's something that right now that's probably what scares me, right? Is to start a job where you're gonna earn not enough to cover your food on the table, to cover your medical expenses, right? Bills, right? And have my benefits cut off right away. I mean, there's a program, right? That I guess I burned those because I did some freelancing before and I burned those. So yeah, there's a way, right? But at this point, that's where I'm at, right? Where I need to, if I get a job, I mean, I got to make sure that all those things are going to be covered, right? Before I can start being financial freedom.
Yeah, it's a valid concern for sure.
Absolutely.
There is a limit to where you can work. I don't know the amount right now. I would have to ask my father. He's like an expert on these questions. But I know that you could go back to work so long as you don't make a certain amount and still get your benefits.
Yes.
But again, you got to be careful with those. It's a fine line because it's one of those things where as soon as you just go over by a dollar, like that's it. So you gotta really ask the right questions and have somebody reliable that you can talk to about those things because it is a big concern right nowadays. Insurance is changing. Am I better off just staying here and receiving my disability benefits? Or should I take a chance and lose all that to go get a job? Yeah, maybe I'll get paid more and awesome and I got lucky, but it's a valid concern.
Very.
So yeah, that's where I know the last conversation that I had with my caseworker is about probably starting as a volunteer at an engineering firm and seeing how I do and then get a job offer and kind of like an internship, right? Basically, that's what it's going to be, similar. And go from there, right? It's depending on the amount, right? The numbers. But yeah, so that's where I'm at right now, right? But meanwhile, when I started therapy, that was part also, I talked to my representative, right, from the DARS. Well, not DARS anymore, now it's workforce. So I'm going through that's something that I'm just waiting for the call, right, as well.
Mario,
I have to go through the therapy process that I requested, right? And basically, when I went to therapy, I asked my doctor because I saw the documentary from Christopher Reed, where he starts moving on the pool, and I'm like, well, he's doing it. His injury was worse. I'm like, I'm gonna ask my doctor, and he did send me for therapy, and it was DHR. And that's how I am also with the team right now.
Mario, before we wrap it up, I want to give you the floor. Imagine you're speaking directly to someone who just experienced a similar injury, similar spinal cord injury. They're scared. What would you say to them?
Well, what I would say to them, first of all, is to be patient, right? To be patient, right? Especially if you have your loved ones, either your wife, like in my case, and my kids that have supported me all these years. But if you don't, I mean, just have faith, right? And believe that everything is going to be better, like Danny said, right? But the first thing is be patient. That's something that I wasn't at the beginning. I used to be a person that would do everything real fast when before my accident. So I wanted from, in this case, my wife, right? Because you feel more like you know her, right? And this and that. I mean, you have the trust. And so with her, I mean, I wanted to give me like everything fast, like, you know, some my food or my water. And she's like, Mario, wait, I'm your wife. I'm here to help you, but I cannot do everything. I have the kids. I have to go there. And yes, and because sometimes we get stuck in our disability and feel bad sometimes at some point, right? But I was like that, right? Where I wanted everything done fast. Just be patient because they want to help you. But if we make their lives miserable with the attitude, it's going to get worse, right? So that's something that, first of all, be patient, be grateful that you're going to have somebody there for you. It might seem that they don't like you because they're going to get after you because of this and that, because it's our own fault, right? Because of the attitude that we're projecting. So always have a positive mind, a positive attitude about everything, and take advantage of every opportunity that is going to make you better in whatever way it is. Yeah.
Danny, do you have any final thoughts?
You know, exactly what he said. Be patient. It's okay. You know, he did mention, you know, don't get mad at your loved ones. It's okay to get angry from time to time. Punch the air, yell, right? And then just go right back to what you were doing, right? Just get it out of your system and then just keep on keeping on, right? He's hit it right on the dot, right? Just patience is a virtue here, and it's going to be some baby steps. It's a long road.
Baby steps.
I tell people, right? You were saying a little while ago, Danny, about educating people or talking to people about our disability. Some people don't want to speak about it. I don't mind if people, sometimes people ask me, I tell them what happened to me. I mean, I do tell them where I'm at also, right? and they're just amazed right then. And I mean, it's a good feeling that you're projecting something positive to others that maybe are going through something bad. I know the story also of this gentleman, right? He's the husband of somebody that I know, right? He came and helped me with a project here at home. I didn't know that he had cut off his finger with a lawnmower, right, from his toes, I believe. And I talked to him. He came to my house. He told me what happened to him. We spoke, right? And then we met again maybe like a year after and at a party, right? And he told me, Mario, remember when we met? Something like this, not exactly the same, but he said, remember back then I had this injury, remember that I told you? And I felt real depressed. And I thought that the world had ended for me and this and that. I was being bad to my wife and this, you know. But when I saw you and heard your story, I'm like, what am I doing? I can still walk. I can still walk my butt on my own and this and that. So he changed his mentality, he says. Right. And,
well, thank you. Yeah. I want to thank your wife for all she's done for you. And absolutely. For me, dude, when I'm at your house and she's always very helpful. Taught me how to pull a battery tray the other day.
Yeah, she showed me how to put a shroud back on in TDX.
Yeah, dude. She's like, move. Yeah, she's pretty amazing, dude. So, yeah, we just want to thank you, man, so much for coming onto our podcast. And I look forward to doing it again with you and getting into the weeds a little bit more on equipment that you've been in and the good, the bad, the ugly, ATP, and the whole bit.
Mario, real quick. So you had mentioned earlier that your wife doesn't think that you appreciate her. That's what you had said?
Yes.
Remember? Mario, right now, I want you to take the opportunity to tell your wife thank you.
Thank you, chaparrita. Sabes que sin ti, la vida para mí hubiera sido mucho más difícil. No digo que imposible porque no tengo una mente negativa, pero sí hubiera sido mucho más difícil. Y tú haces las cosas muy fáciles para mí. Demasiado, diría yo. Te lo agradezco con todo mi corazón.
Thank you, fellas.
Thank you for everybody tuning in to this episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable. I think this was really, really good. Real good stuff, but we for sure will get Mario on later on. We're going to continue the story.
Yeah. Eating.
Exactly.
All that good
stuff. All right. Well, Danny, thank you for joining us. And we look forward to having you on the show. Mario, thank you so much. And Roland, appreciate you, buddy.
You bet, man.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.